What is good, everybody? Welcome in, welcome back to the NFC West Mixtape. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera of the 49ers Gold Standard Podcast. That is Dan Vienz of the Seahawks Forever Podcast. This is the show where we break down everything happening in the league's best division. Dan, how you doing on this fine, fine Thursday?
I'm good. I know this. At the VMAC in Renton, Washington today, the pads come on for the Seattle Seahawks. I don't know how all the other teams line up because they don't all start on the same day, but the acclimation period is over. We can start hitting.
Yes, the Niners pads come on Friday. They're off today. But maybe that's a good thing for the 49ers, Dan, because for all of us in San Francisco hoping, dreaming, just begging for them to have a season with even average injury luck, it is already off the rails. And as you can see on the screen, if you're watching on YouTube, of course, the Kyle Shanahan thing being the biggest and most impactful of all of this. But Ricky Pearsall may be lost for the entire season. Christian Kirk has a calf strain. Jordan James has broken ribs.
How do you break ribs when there's no contact?
They're not even in pads. I think what happened is that Fred Warner went for the punch out and did not hit the ball and may have hit Jordan James in the ribs. Malik Mustafa, hamstring strain. Verdarian Lowe, their backup left tackle, the dreaded high ankle sprain. And rookie defensive tackle Grayson Halton has a bone bruise in his knee. My question to you, Dan, is why would the substation do this?
First of all, I know there's been a lot of controversy around the whole thing this week, but just really happy that things could have been a lot worse with Kyle Shanahan there in that car accident. And thankfully, nobody was injured more severely than it appears that he is. And hopefully he's back on the sideline as quickly as possible. We can make jokes about the substation all we want to, but like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Pearsall thing, because this is one that suddenly some of those cryptic videos and things you see over the offseason of workouts and whatnot that you don't think much of it at the time suddenly have more impact. I remember watching videos and he's wearing a compression sleeve and fans and analysts were debating about whether he looked like he was cutting full speed and if the knee was still 100% healthy or not. And it's one thing to pick up a new injury, but it's got to be really, really frustrating when a guy that just has not been able to stay healthy at all ends up now being compromised and potentially deep into the season with something that could have been fixed.
Well, that's the infuriating part of the whole thing, is that it's not multiple injuries with Ricky Pearsall. It's the same knee injury. He hurt it against the Jaguars. It didn't even look like a crazy play. He caught a ball on the sidelines and fell down on the ground. He just happened to land wrong on that knee, hurt the PCL. And this is sort of the breakdown from what I've heard from everybody, is that most PCL injuries heal without surgery. And that's what they were hoping for the 49ers. He battled it all year last year. He kept re-aggravating it. Was the problem. He would come back and play. He would look good. And then he would re-aggravate it again. And the hope was, hey, let's rest it this offseason. He won't be playing. And that'll heal up. And they'll be good to go. Well, unfortunately, that didn't happen. And if they decided in February to have the surgery, he'd still probably be out for the whole year. So I think it was kind of a calculated risk by the 49ers of, hey, if he doesn't heal, he's going to have the surgery anyway. And even if he has it in February, he'll still miss the season. So hopefully, fingers crossed, he can come back and not have a problem. Unfortunately, 2 days into camp, he's got swelling in that knee. And it looks like that's the road that we're headed down with Ricky Pearsall.
Well, let me ask you this then. I asked you last week about Deebo Samuel potentially coming back. Do you feel differently about that answer now if you're faced with the prospect of no Ricky Pearsall this year?
Maybe slightly, but Stribling has so far looked really, really good. So hopefully he can step into that Pearsall role. I don't know. I don't like dipping back into the past. I don't know what Deebo Samuel has left. He's already complained about not getting enough passes in the past. Like, now we're going to bring you in a minor role, and I don't want to hear you complaining in the locker room, you know? So I don't know. I would, maybe if they lose somebody else, and I guess Christian Kirk is already down. You still have DeMarcus Robinson there. He's reportedly looked good this summer as well. I'm not there yet. I'm not saying I could never get there. I'm saying I'm not there yet.
Do you think Stephon Diggs might enter the conversation at all?
It's possible. I don't know what his off the field situation is. I can't remember off the top of my head. He certainly had 1,000 yards last year coming back from the ACL. He's a solid player. So I wouldn't hate it, but again, I need to investigate more of the off-field because the 49ers generally do not mess with anybody that has had any off-field issues.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's rare when a guy like that is out there. And so I'm sure he's going to be at the top of anyone's list that loses a receiver over the next month or so.
I mean, you got to be sitting there as a Seahawks fan like, yep, Niners are injured again. Okay, we're back and rolling.
I mean, I don't want to say anything because – I don't have any real wood to knock on here. There's wood in this probably. They're remarkably healthy for this time of training camp. I think it's the first time since Mike McDonald's been here anyway. So first time in 3 years, they haven't had to put anybody on the non-football injury list. They only had to put a couple of guys on the PUP list and they were all, you know, they were players we expected. Nick Emmanuel, we talked about him last week. That was a little bit of a surprise. It's a minor issue. They expect him back by week one. And then, you know, Kenny McIntosh had to go on the PUP list. They just released him. We knew Zach Charbonnet was going to go there. The only other one was rookie nose tackle Devin Eastern. He just came off today. So, again, knock on wood, there hasn't been anything because, man, you look around the league and it looks like maybe the Cincinnati Bengals dodged a bullet with Shamar Stewart. But that looked really bad yesterday. He had to be carted off. The Carolina Panthers now have lost two of their really exciting young players, one on each side of the ball for the season now, Chris Brazil and Nick Scorton. We see it every year, and you hate to see it. Let's just put a stop to the injuries, can we?
How about just guys stop getting injured? That would, you know, yeah. I'm just saying it would be a lot easier from our perspective. But, yeah, it's – clearly frustrating for all 49ers fans.
Yeah.
I was the biggest. I mean, I was so looking forward to Ricky Pearsall. I was telling everybody how good I thought he is and how good I thought he was going to be this year. And it was just, you know, I try not to get too attached to players, but I liked Ricky, you know, ever since the shooting happened and all that stuff, I've just been rooting for him. And it's just the train can't leave the station, unfortunately. And it looks like it's not going anywhere this season. And obviously the 49ers are dealing with multiple starters already hurt. Long way until we get to September when the games start, but clearly not a good sign for anybody in San Francisco.
I always hate the term injury prone. I think fans sometimes can throw that around a little too casually. I think sometimes it's unfair. It's such a violent sport all the time, you know, whether they're hitting in practice or not. But it does seem like some players just have that really bad luck. And for whatever reason, they cannot get and stay healthy. That's been the story of Ricky Pearsall's career to this point. Let's hope he can get healthy soon. And because I agree with you, man, I really liked him coming out in the draft. I thought he was one of the best, if not the best route runner in that draft. You know, a guy that did strike some fear a little bit into us as an opponent because he's so shifty. And I mean, we saw it week one last year when they needed to make a big play. They went to Ricky Pearsall and he made a big play.
Guy never missed a game due to injury in college, in 5 years in college. And he cannot get on the field and stay on the field in the NFL. It's a different league. I know everyone's bigger, stronger, faster. And maybe that's the biggest example of it.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
All right, let's go down the road a little bit to Arizona now. I know you were particularly fired up about this, Dan, not because you fear the Arizona Cardinals now that they have solved their financial dispute with quarterback Jacoby Brissett. He gets a much bigger contract now. The Cardinals have decided to give him he's going to make a base salary of $15.5 million, which I believe his previous contract, he only had $1.5 million guaranteed. So big bump up for Jacoby Brissett. Super Bowl now for the Cardinals, right?
It's like you so aptly pointed out, it's not that I fear them. It's not that it changes my perception of who they're going to be on the field this year. In fact, that kind of plays into why I'm so frustrated. It's just, I care about the game of football so much that it just bothers me when people treat it so poorly. And I don't understand. We talked about this last week, how he had no leverage, you know, how they brought in Gardner Minshew, who it's not just because I'm a Coug. Like, I think he's a solid backup quarterback who, when asked to start, has won games for teams. And I think can be nearly as effective as a guy like Jacoby Brissett. And he's younger and he's a little bit more mobile. Having Jacoby Brissett on the field or not does nothing, absolutely nothing, for the Arizona Cardinals prospects this year. Are they going to win even one more game with him on the field versus? I don't feel that way. Their defense is terrible. They didn't address it in the draft or the offseason, and now they've suffered some injuries on that side of the ball. Their offensive line needs work. They drafted a running back third overall when they had massive other needs. They don't have anybody on the top 100 list except Trey McBride. Like, they just, there's no talent there. Jacoby Brissett's not going to elevate that roster, and he had no leverage. What's he going to do? Hold out and not get paid? Okay, then let him do that, and you ride with Gardner Minshew until Carson Beck is ready, and presumably Carson Beck's having a decent spring or a decent training camp. Instead, they just gave him $13 million, 14 cash. It's a one-year deal. It's not even one of those things where they could add a void year and manipulate and spread it out. They just gave him more cash.
Essentially a $10 million raise for Jacoby Brissett. I agree with everything you said.
I don't get it.
Now, look, I'm always in favor of players getting paid. They're the ones taking all the risks, so I'm fine. Good for Jacoby Brissett, and good for you for asking for it, right? You can't get it if you don't ask, so good for you. And he didn't even have an agent, so he was doing all this himself. That's fine. If I were a fan of the Arizona Cardinals, it's a one-year deal, whatever. But just from a team-building perspective, like you said, if this is just another barrier to figuring out whether or not Carson Beck can play and it's more expensive, there's no win here for you if you're the Cardinals, except for maybe the fact that it sends a slight message to the players like, hey, look, we're paying one of our guys. But they also have, you know, a decades-long history under this ownership of not really taking care of guys, not treating people well. So I don't even know if they get that out of it.
They still have $35 million in cap space. If I'm Gardner Minshew, I might threaten to hold out unless I get $10 million to be the backup. It's just, I mean, they already had $74 million or something like that in dead money this year because of the Kyler Murray situation. This was going to be a reset type of year, right? To get your finances in order, hope to attract some free agents there over the next couple of years, because the drafts certainly haven't been that inspiring. I don't know what the plan is. I don't see a plan, and without a plan, you can't even say, you know, whether it's going to work or not, because what is the plan? I just don't get it.
Fail to plan, plan to fail. That's the most dad thing I've ever
hope
said.
Hope is not a plan. That's one of my favorite expressions, and I think it applies to our friends, the Cardinals down in the desert.
Sorry, Cardinals fans. Sorry.
We try to find reasons to say good things about you. We do.
Hopefully, Jeremiah Price is, not Jeremiah. I have a block with the two running backs. They're both in the NFC West. I don't understand why it's like that. Love is like, God, I don't know why I confused the two, but yeah, hopefully he's really good. That's all I'll say about you.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
All right, Dan, let's travel to Seattle now. Let's go to your Seahawks where everything is hunky-dory. You got your Super Bowl ring. There's no drama. There's no injuries. Now you may add Jadeveon Clowney to the mix. Tell us what's going on there.
Yeah, there was some reporting a couple of days ago that he visited with the Cleveland Browns. I guess he spent a couple of days with them. There's mutual interest there. Their GM, Andrew Berry, has said that they want to sign him. But Clowney's on the, you know, I always think of Ndamukong Suh when it comes to these types of players. Later in their career, they just play on one-year deals. They don't want to go through training camp, you know? And so he'll sign 2 weeks from now, maybe. But, and that all kind of sounded sort of cut and dried. And then shortly afterwards, there were a couple of reports, Jordan Schultz, Aaron Wilson, both saying that the Seahawks also have interest in Clowney, which caused me to go back and look at some texts back in May and June that I had with a team source who works in the personnel department. And back then he was telling me about how Clowney was at the top of their list and how they still wanted to add one more wave to their pass rush. And this was even after they had signed Dante Fowler. So We know that the match with Mike Macdonald and Jadeveon Clowney worked before, had really kind of resurrected his career, had a great year in Baltimore on a one-year deal, turned that into a multi-year deal with the Panthers that didn't end up, you know, extending beyond 1 year. He's an elite run defender still at this point in his career. He could still get to the quarterback. He showed that in Dallas last year. It might seem like an odd fit, but what did Pete Carroll used to even always say? You can never have too many pass rushers. They like to use those guys in waves and keep them fresh. And so it does sound like it's a possibility.
I mean, it's a good deal. If you're a veteran player, he could be on like the third wave of pass rushers. How many snaps is he going to play a game? 20 snaps a game?
Yeah, 30% snap rate tops.
Right. He's going to collect a seven-figure deal. I mean, obviously, look, it's a risk anytime you're on an NFL field, but it ain't bad work if you can get it. Definitely. Clowney had 8.5 sacks last year for the Cowboys. Like, he has something left to contribute. And again, you're not asking him to carry your pass rush load if you're Seattle. I'd love to move. If the Niners made it, if the Seahawks made it, I completely understand it. Why not? If you've got the money, why not?
Well, and when the report first came out, it just mentioned that an NFC West team was interested before the Seahawks were named. And so my first thought was, man, that sounds right for the Niners. Like, they can afford it on a one-year deal, right?
Oh, yeah.
Makes sense for the Cardinals. I mean, the Cardinals desperately need a player like that. But to which, you know, I was about to say, well, but why would he want to go to the Cardinals? But why would he want to play in Cleveland either right now? So, you know, if you want a chance to win and still make a couple extra $1 million in a system that you know, a scheme that you're familiar with, and a team that's going to keep you fresh, I think Seattle would make a lot of sense.
If we're talking about NFC West teams adding people on the defensive line, Jadeveon Clowney is not the name that most 49er fans are hoping for right now, Dan. That name is Vita Vea, who has reportedly asked for a trade from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He would like to get paid because this has been the offseason of defensive tackles getting the bag. He's still a very good player. Would the Seahawks be interested in Vita Vea, and do you think the Niners should make a play for him?
No and yes. Yeah, I don't think he fits in Seattle at all. You know, first of all, from a schematic standpoint, I think having that big, huge kind of old school throwback nose tackle just isn't as important. They like to play those lighter boxes and have guys with positional versatility. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're already, you know, talks heated up again this week, or at least the news did that there's discussions between Leonard Williams and the Seahawks, and that he might be on the verge of signing another big extension. He's entering the last year of his deal, playing the best football of his career. Byron Murphy is in line for a massive deal a year from now. We just saw what Jalen Carter just got in Philadelphia. And so you add Vita Vea to that mix, knowing he wants another deal. It just doesn't fit at all. I don't think the Seahawks would even probably make a phone call in that case. And we know how John Schneider likes to make calls on everything. For the Niners, it makes sense for now, and they could certainly fit the salary in now, but they're over the cap for 2027 and 2028 as things currently stand. You've got Nick Bosa with some huge cap hits coming up. I just, you know, can they make that work? He'd certainly make sense on the field. I don't know that he says he wants to play in the West Coast. And so everybody, you know, made some assumptions about the Rams and the Niners, of course, but it does sound like there's some interest there from the Raiders. And maybe that's ultimately where he ends up. But there's also the question of how much he has left in the tank. I think there's a reason that Tampa Bay is not willing to step up and give him a whole bunch of new money. Because first of all, they got a pissed off quarterback. And second of all, he's 31 years old and probably his best days are behind him.
Yeah, but Vita Vea's non-best days are still better than
anything. Hard to move. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Small name, big man.
Yes. I mean, I can have dreams of Oso, Odighizuwa, and Vita Vea in the middle of that 49ers defensive line with Nick Bosa coming off one edge and Mykal Williams and Romello Hight coming off the other. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, this goes from not just, you know, a liability, but to really a dangerous front there, especially with Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw behind him. Like, who's laying a hand on Fred Warner if you've got Vita Vea and Oso Odighizuwa up front?
Yeah, and maybe in that sense, if he's that desperate to get out of Tampa Bay, and it sounds like he's really not happy, then, and maybe it kind of fits in with the Baker Mayfield thing. If he looks and sees, you know, that they're not going to support their franchise quarterback, then what direction is that team headed? maybe he, you know, if he can't find the perfect situation elsewhere with a team that's willing to give him a big deal, maybe the Niners make sense. You just go play out the last year of your contract and you win, right? You have a chance to win and play in a great division, play meaningful games, and then hit the, you know, you go have a good season, you hit free agency, you get one more deal. I mean, maybe it does make some sense.
That would be my pitch to Vita Vea. I would say, look, come to San Francisco for a year. We have $70 million in cap room. We'll give you, you know, a $30 million contract for 1 year. Great. Here's $30 million. Come play with us. If you want to re-sign afterwards, maybe we figure it out. If you go your separate way, whatever. You're going to be surrounded in a great situation. You're going to have a great defensive coordinator in Raheem Morris. You're going to have a hell of a contract year. We'll come over and get the bag next year and maybe win another ring.
Yeah.
Mike Evans is there. Maybe Mike Evans can recruit him too. I don't know. Now, I don't know what it would take to get Vita Vea. That's a whole other, you know, ball of wax. I'm not sure what the Bucks would want for him, but I think John Lynch has to pick up the phone, especially because, Dan, if this is a year where Kyle Shanahan may be not at his best for the entire season, we don't know. Why not lean into the defense? Lean into Raheem Morris and what you've got there.
Sure. Yeah. Especially when you've got the Rams in your division, and I think the Seahawks are going to be a good offense as well. And I think it makes a lot of sense.
We'll see if they actually do it. He has ties to the Bay Area also. He went to high school in California, I believe. So he's from there. We'll see. But the Vita Vea interest is intriguing from a 49er fan perspective, and it'd be a nice little shot in the arm after all the injuries they've had so far in camp.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
Finally, let's get to our Los Angeles Rams. Speaking of contract situations, things are a little bit weird with Puka Nacua, who's eligible for a new deal. We know he's has some off-field issues as well. Who's calling you right now, Dan? Is that Puka?
I forgot to hit my do not disturb. No, it's a robocall, dude. I get 10 of those robocalls a day. It's ridiculous.
Yes, it is. It's also ridiculous that Puka Nacua, who has done damn fine work in the National Football League, been one of the best wide receivers that we have seen, yet he's going to have to play out the year to get a contract because of the off-field situation, and he checked himself into rehab this offseason, and it's very much seems like a wait-and-see situation in L.A.
Yeah, multiple reports now. I think Ian Rappaport's been all over this one, that they really don't have any intention to sign him to that big extension now. They want to see how things play out. They want to see if he can continue kind of that journey to maturation, potentially off the field, so they can maximize the player he is on the field. Because it's ridiculous to think, but I feel like we've seen multiple examples this offseason of him being underappreciated, you know, and where he finished in that ESPN receiver list, although it's hard to argue with the guys ahead of him. But just maybe it is the off-field stuff that colors some people's perception or opinion of him, but he's such a great player, and he plays the game in a way that's easy to appreciate, right? The way he can be so physical and make the tough catch in traffic, the way he sacrifices his body, even as a blocker, and that's so important to what the Rams do down there. I have a ton of appreciation watching him from afar, but I have heard some speculation now this week that, you know, maybe the plan all along is there will be no extension and that they're going to get one more good year out of him, franchise tag him next year. Remember, he was a fifth round pick, so there's no fifth year option. This is it. This is the last year of his rookie deal. So there's less flexibility there. You get to the end of the season, you franchise tag him and then trade him. And then that helps them address some of those other big looming contract extensions they have coming up on both lines and elsewhere around their roster. That's the cost of drafting well, is you got to pay these guys eventually. You have to make some choices, some hard choices on who you let leave. We just saw the Seahawks make some of those choices this offseason. And now it seems like there's some buzz, some speculation growing that maybe part of the plan is that this might be Nakua's last year in LA.
Coming off a season where he had 129 catches, that led the NFL, 80 first downs, that led the league as well, and 107 yards per game, which also, yes, led the NFL. And 10 touchdowns. Oh, by the way, he blocks like a demon. From a football-only perspective, he's absolutely the kind of guy you would want on your team. But there is a whole other side to this, as we know. We'll see how that all plays out. Honestly, as good a player as he has been for the Rams, I would understand if they did exactly what you said, Dan. I get it. You cannot pay everybody. In terms of replaceable positions, particularly, I think, for Sean McVay, wide receiver is one that there are a lot of good wide receivers coming out in the draft every year. I get it. If that's what the Rams were to do, I wouldn't like it, but I would understand it.
It makes it harder to get behind when you also consider that Davante Adams is in the last year of his deal and is an aging player. I mean, it's a little inconceivable to me that they would accept being in a position a year from now where, well, less than a year from now, right? Draft time, free agency, where you're having to replace both those guys. But then I guess, you know, the argument there is any trade of Puka Nacua, maybe it brings back a receiver or a package of draft picks. It's a strong draft, yada, yada, yada. It just, it's hard to imagine them letting him get away, but people are talking about it. And a lot of times in the NFL, when some of these analysts, these insiders, these people in the know start, when you see the smoke, a lot of times it means that there really is fire behind it.
I'm sure the Rams have their eyes focused on this year and this year only, as they should, because they will be one of the top contenders for the Super Bowl. The Puka Nacua situation, fascinating. We will see. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Thank you, everybody. Please like this video, hype this video, subscribe to both the 49ers Gold Standard podcast and the Seahawks Forever podcast. Both YouTube channels are also available wherever you get your audio podcasts as well. Dan, always good to talk to you. Next week, we'll have pads on. We'll have more reaction to training camp, and we'll break down the next half dozen 49ers injuries.
A week from today, there will be a game. The Arizona Cardinals are going to play in a game. So, yeah, here we go. We got there.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk next week.